Hi, I'm Stu Baca, and I'm a Gen X grown-up, and I support Gen X grown-up on Patreon, and you should too at patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X grown-up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up podcast listeners, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And you know Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
In this episode, you know, today life screeches to a halt when your Wi-Fi goes down, but just three short decades ago, the internet was a brand new thing that we had no idea we even needed. In this episode, we're going to look back at the origins of the internet and how we experienced it in its early days as young Generation Xers.
Mm-mm.
Well, on the topic of connectivity, our fourth listener email this episode comes from Scott. The subject line of Scott's email was, "Internet killed the BBS star."
Good title.
I like that. That's good.
That's a good one.
Scott says, "Hey gang, it's great to hear you guys talk about something that was very important part of my formative high school years, bulletin board systems. My family never got a computer until I was a freshman in high school in the early 90s, and that same year we had a 2400 baud modem. Not long after that, I found a list of local BBSs that I began frequenting. I learned that the majority of folks frequenting those boards were also in high school or college, and they had organized a weekly meetup and called themselves the Dead Hackers Society."
Jeez, I guess I know what movie was popular when they made that group.
Yeah. Yeah. Early 90s, right? He says, "I was invited to join their meetups as they were not exclusive and very welcoming to all. The first time I went to a meetup was mere days after I received my driver's license." I love how things align. Like, you remember in your life, like, that's when I got my driver's license, or that's when I was able to drink, or whatever, I turned 20, those kind of things. Yeah, so for him, this aligned, like going to BBS group and being able to drive. That's awesome. Anyway, he says, "I will say this. I don't keep in contact with anyone from my high school, but I've been in continual contact with many of the DHS people I met, the Dead Hacker Society. My current network of close friends has its roots in that little BBS group I joined. I'm extremely grateful to have met such fine people, and my life would be very different today, even career-wise, had it not been for logging into a BBS. Speaking of it shaping my career, my first job right out of high school was working as tech support for AOL, and of those DHS people was my referral."
Oh, wow.
Right? Finally, he says, "I'm a little sad that my vast knowledge of modem string configurations and optimizations is essentially wasted and useless space in my brain. Thanks again for the work you guys put into making a great podcast. And I hope George is happy that this email does not contain anything saying he is wrong."
I am happy. Yes. Thank you, Scott.
Good. Yeah. What a great, you know, and I didn't edit that email very much because I really like the story that Scott tells.
No, that was great.
You know, when you connect things like that, the tech you enjoyed growing up, and especially his, those people continue to be present in his life. That's great. I mean, BBSs were like that. Is that early kind of Wild West days, and the people that you met were, you know, they were like-minded people that had the same interests, because not just everybody was online at the time. You had to work at it a little bit. We really appreciate you, Scott, for writing in. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com, and we will put you in the hopper. All right. So speaking of Scott's email and the early days of being online, I think it's time to jump in to talk about the origins of the internet. So George, Mo, if you guys are ready.
Yes, do
it. Absolutely.
All right. Let's get into it.
On your mark, get set. We're riding on the internet, cyberspace, set free. Hello, virtual reality.
Interactive appetite, searching for a website, a window to the world, got to get online.
Take a spin, now you're in with the techno set. You're going surfing on the internet.
Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because
because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. On some of our previous Backtrack episodes, we have touched on some parts of early computing. I know we had an episode all about BBSs that Scott mm-hmm. was referencing. We had an episode all about computer graphics. We had one about gaming.
Yeah, early gaming.
Yeah, but in this episode, I mean, and for all those things, the glue that started to hold that together ultimately was the internet. So we're focusing on the technology itself, the origin of the internet. I knew a little bit about the origins of the internet, but I did a little bit of extra digging in preparation so we didn't sound like total noobs on this episode. It was in the early 1960s. That was the first discussion of any kind of a global network. Mm-hmm. There's a series of MIT memos discussing a galactic network, which I love that name. I wish that was the name of the internet today. Interconnected computers with quick access to data and programs. So it was just an idea. I was like, hey, maybe we could do this. It made sense. And then late 60s, early 70s, we probably all heard of ARPANET, which was pretty much the predecessor of internet. It came out of, it was like the Department of Defense kind of ran ARPA, and then the universities got involved. Yep. It first went online in 1969 and then rapidly expanded. It was actually declared operational and like functional in 1975. And then finally, in the 80s, ARPANET was expanded when the National Science Foundation funded CSNET, the Computer Science Network. And all of that kind of culminates in 1990 when ARPANET was decommissioned. Partnerships with telecom and computer industries paved the way for a worldwide network that we now know today as the internet.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun. And so how do you get into talking about something that's so huge? Let's go back and talk about when it was so small. So probably for us, it really came about in the very early 90s, like 89, 90 was when what became the internet kind of first came online. And we were all in our late teens, early 20s at that time. Mm-hmm. We were, I guess, George, you and I, we knew each other by then already in the early 90s. And Mo, mm-hmm. you were in New York. You had a couple of years older than us. So let's start talking about the nuts and bolts and how we got this stuff together. And I want to start with a question for each of you. So do you remember the first time you heard the concept of the internet? And I want to start with you, George.
Well, that's probably a bad place to start because I don't remember the first time.
Really? It just kind of, no. It just kind of evolved. It's not like, kind of popped up.
It's not one of those seminal moment type of things for me, like, you know, Kennedy's assassination or the space shuttle Challenger exploding. It's not one of those things where I remember where I was when it happened or anything like that, because it wasn't a thing that just boom, exploded. It was a gradual thing that evolved from my involvement of BBSs, which is what Scott was talking about earlier, all the way through to the internet. So I was kind of always taking little steps towards going onto the internet, just didn't understand what it was. So it wasn't oh crap moment. I'm on the internet. Oh, I've connected. I've heard of the internet now. It wasn't that kind of a thing. It was just an evolution
kind from of seeped into your life a little bit. Yeah. You know, I have a vivid memory of I was attending Florida State University, and a friend of ours that George, you and I both knew in our Star Trek club that we knew each other then, we were talking about unrelated things, and she had said to me, hey, have you tried the internet yet? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, oh, well, you can get an address. And I'm like, well, I have an address. I live up the street here. No, it's like it's an address. They can send you mail, but it's on the computer and it's through this network. And at the time I literally dismissed it. I'm like, I have BBSs. I have that taken care of. I don't think I need this. And it wasn't until a little bit later that I'm like, oh, she was onto something. What about you, Mo? Do you recall hearing about it, or are you like George?
I'm kind of like with George. It's like, I mean, it was one of these things. I think it just sort of evolved, like George kind of said, you know, mm-hmm. like we said, we had BBSs and we had these online services and all that kind of thing, you know, like AOL came around and Genie and all those things. And then out of that, and honestly, at first I thought that was the internet, like AOL, but then I realized that wasn't, you know, very quickly.
And many baby boomers still think that's the internet. So.
Right. And then, but then, yeah, it was kind of over time that, you know, except the first thing was getting onto these third-party systems, right? That was the first time you kind of got onto the, I don't even call it the interweb, it's called the whatever.
Well, they started as a service, you're right.
Right.
And then I remember vividly when AOL said, AOL, now with the internet.
Right.
They tried to compartmentalize the internet as like a channel you could go to.
Right. They didn't want you going to the internet. They wanted you to stay on AOL.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But then the internet quickly blew up because then you weren't beholden to anything, you know, to create your own website and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it was just more like an evolution, like George said.
So I mean, before the internet age came around, unless you were on BBSs like we were, you probably didn't even have a modem. So people started to, you know, I remember people vividly going, oh, this computer has a modem. And they go, what's a modem? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Modulator, demodulator.
That's right.
That's right.
Exactly right.
Good one.
And I always tell them that too. It means, because I sounded smarter, it means modulator,
right.
Demodulator.
Exactly.
What does that mean? Hooks to your phone? That's the end of my knowledge.
Remember in War Games? Matthew Broderick.
Sure, of course.
The modem he had to pick up the phone and he heard the tones and he stuck it on this big
put it on
thing.
The cups.
Yeah. So that he could get the sound. But I tell you, that sound though, whenever you hear that internet connect, or I should say the modem connect sounds, it's still like, it sends chills. I still remember it. Yeah. You know?
I have a Pavlovian response. It's like I hear that noise and I'm like, I'm about to do something cool. Something's about to happen. It's neat. You hear that modem sound.
I even have memories that I knew different sounds meant different speeds, almost like you.
Yes, of course.
You know,
yes.
Handshakes were
if you
longer,
did that
shorter.
Enough, the different pitches.
Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You go, oh, it fell back. It's going to be a slow speed. You can hear it if you did it enough.
Yep.
And speed mattered back then. So we're talking about the transition pre and post internet. So modems were not an obvious part of computers. So, like today, how they're not an obvious part of computers. They don't exist anymore. But used to be you bought a separate box that you plugged up because they weren't included.
Then
you would start to, and you would upgrade that, like, oh, I have a 300 baud, I have a 1200 baud,
9600,
which literally means bits per second, which is you can type faster than 300 baud, most people can, you know,
right?
Well, 150 baud maybe, we'll be generous, and so you would buy that separate box. And then they started, probably the first modem built into a computer that I remember was the computer that you bought, George. We've talked before about how you brought it to my house because it had John Delancey starring in a full motion video introduction to your computer.
The Compaq, yeah.
It had a built-in modem.
You brought your computer to John's house?
Well, to my, yeah.
Well, so John and I lived in the same apartment complex.
Oh, okay.
So we literally, the only thing separating his apartment from mine was the pool in between.
See, right. I thought it was like when it was like, wow, that's the ultimate like middle finger. I'm going to bring it to your house to show you how cool this is.
Well, I mean, it kind of was too, but.
Well, but it was mainly like it was almost like an event. Like we had a little party and several people came over. I think there was like 10 or 15 people there that night. And it was like a setup of this computer party because that was still a very new and unique thing at that point. And so John and I were setting up the computer. People were milling around, having snacks and everything. It was a very odd situation. It was like a nerd palooza kind of a thing. The culmination of the whole thing, which I kind of knew from the outside of the box, but we had no really clue of what it was going to be, was that setup video that John talks about with John Delancey as Q, you know, and he comes over there and we're all Star Trek people. So John Delancey, of course, we're fawning all over it.
Yeah, he's like, welcome to the future of the internet with your new computer and look what great things it can do. If you had never understood the allure of the unboxing video on YouTube, this was like a modern analog unboxing video. It's like, come over, we're going to open this new toy in front of you. Which
it sounds like one of those days of like, oh, did you hear the Johnson's got a TV set, you know?
It was very much like that, yeah.
It was, yeah. Which was like a 200 megahertz or 233 or something, because I remember whatever it was, shortly thereafter, I got whatever the next like 33 megahertz faster was. And,
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes because it was built in, people would upgrade their computer just to have a better ability to have a good experience on the internet in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, computers weren't throwaway devices yet.
That's true.
So that's why they had to upgrade them. I mean, you bought a computer that was with you for a long time at that point.
Yeah. I remember my first computer, though, that we actually connected to the internet and all that stuff. I had to upgrade the memory because the 64K or whatever it had on it was not nearly enough. I had to go up to 128 or something like that, because otherwise it would just bog down. It was just the thing would just not run.
Yeah, it didn't have the resources capable
to pull in multiple programs. 1200 bits a second, whatever. It's crazy. Yep.
And so in our next segment, we're going to talk about the things that we did use it for in the early days. That's coming up right after this break.
Today, we're going to be showing our friends Andrew and Lisa the basics of the internet, and we thought you might want to come along.
It'll be cool.
Now, here's a little background. When we installed internet access on our computer, I got the whole family involved.
It's true. Everybody had their own tasks to do.
It was a lot of work, but it was really worth it.
Now that I've gotten on the internet, I'd rather be on my computer than doing just about anything.
It's really cool.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
So now we are aware of the internet and we have the gear we need to get it done. And today, if you think of the internet, it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. Everything's connected to the internet and they can all do different things. They're connecting to different services, but it wasn't like that. So the beginning of the internet that I remember, like circa 92, web browser wasn't even an obvious thing that you had. You connected to the internet, but the web browser was the WWW, that World Wide Web people talk about. Before that, you just connected and you're on a network and you need individual programs to do different things. It wasn't later you ran a Winsock client that allowed HTML browsers to even happen. Mm-hmm. But before we did any of that, Winsock really takes me back when I think about
that. Yeah, I know. I was like, holy cow.
An extra plug-in, right? But there was a bunch of stuff that you could do on the internet short of having the World Wide Web. And the browsers came later. We'll get to in a second. So what kind of stuff did we use the internet for when we first got on the internet, when it was brand new?
I mean, I think, honestly, a lot of the stuff that we did on the internet at the beginning was, again, born out of those days of the BBSs. Some of the things that we used to use on BBSs just got translated to a larger world. For me, it was email.
Yeah.
You know, communicating with people on BBSs was neat, but you had to go to a place in order to check your messages. It was you had to dial into an answering machine almost. But with email over the internet, it came to you. Mm-hmm. And so people would send you messages. And when you would turn on your computer, connect it to the modem and connect that to the internet and then open up that program, it was just there.
Right.
And that was a completely different experience than having to do all the stuff that you had to go through on a BBS to get to your messages.
That was the same for me. I remember I told you that the young lady told me about the internet and said you could get an address. And so the first thing I did was, okay, I'll try it when she talked me into it. And I got an address. And I'm like, and the first person I wrote to was her saying, look, I did it, right? I got on the line. And back then, I mean, spam wasn't a thing. And you could check your email and it was empty. And you're like, aw. And then you did get an email. That's why the AOL guy going, you've got mail, is so cool, because it wasn't, you weren't automatically going to get mail like you are now. We have to filter it out. But that was definitely the first killer app that got me onto the internet.
Yeah, I remember the early days when, like, you know, when most people, or say like the not as geeky people, were using things like AOL, Genie, you know, those things, right? Because it was very easy to entry into all this stuff. Yes. And I remember at first, you could only email other AOL people.
Well, yeah, it wasn't the internet.
It wasn't the internet. Right. It was just, and then they finally linked up to the internet so that you had an AOL address that now someone with Genie could email you. And but like you said, it wasn't like, you know, it didn't take long though, unfortunately. But then it was like every time you got email, it was probably something you wanted to read. Mm-hmm. Whereas today it's like, oh my God, it's not even close.
Well, the other one that I quickly got into was Usenet.
Yeah.
So Usenet were all these, I guess, what would you call it? Usenet is Reddit today, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison.
Like a global kind of chat room sort of sort of kind of like topics, but you had channels you would go to, and they were all like started with alt.trucks.4wheel drive.whatever, right?
Yeah.
And you would find user groups in this Usenet of people that talked about that one thing, but it was a unified place, kind of like Reddit is. It's one place, it's a clearinghouse where all those things live, and you could pick a channel. And that was equivalent to like message boards on a BBS where you could kind of talk with people, but it was people all over the planet, which was a new kind of feature.
Right.
Yeah. It was, of course, it didn't take long for like, what's the first early adopters for any technology in the computers world?
It's porn.
Porn.
Yeah, of course.
but I do agree though. It was like, there was an alt dot anything. Like you said, it's like Reddit.
Oh yeah.
Alt dot. Yeah. I like crocheting swans. Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would find it on there somewhere.
Well, I remember Will Wheaton talking about he was so disappointed to learn there was a alt.wesleycrusher.die. Because people hated Wesley on The Next Generation. But it was a group just for people who hated that character on that TV show. They could come and just rant. Yep.
I think it's like that was the first time I think those small communities of people could actually get together. You know, like, oh, there's 50 of us across the United States. Okay, great. You know, we're a group. Do you guys remember Gopher?
That was the file transfer kind of thing, right?
Before, it was an alternative, actually, to using the World Wide Web, like, actually.
Okay. That shows you how much I remember about it.
Yep. That's okay. No, but it was mostly for, like, transferring files and things like that. It was, like, kind of like the Betamax VHS war. You know, it totally lost to, you know, the World Wide Web and hypertext.
Yeah.
I remember the first couple of times, though, using it. And part of the reason why it wasn't simple to use. You know, the other stuff, you just put an address in and that's it. And this one, you had to understand all the different codes and all that kind of stuff. It was definitely made for a more geeky user, I should say.
Well, we were all more geeky users back then because it wasn't everybody on the internet. It was only people who understood it enough to figure out what you had to do. And I know people worked really hard in technology to demystify it and go, it's simple. Remember that great 90s video of the family? That's like, it's the internet, Tommy. Let's show you. We can check recipes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's weird that they're working so hard to make people want it. Whereas today, you don't have to convince anybody that they want or need the internet. It's instant. It's like utility. We have electricity, we have water, we have gas, we have broadband. And those are the things you got to have, or, you know.
No, it's funny. I just did a quick look at some statistics. And so back in like in the early days, like say 95, mm-hmm. the percentage of the people who used the internet was 14 in the United 14%, States.
Yeah.
Whereas today it's like over 90. It's like 94-95%.
Yeah.
That rings crazy.
Yep. Well, and the first question you ask is, what the hell are the other 5% doing with their day?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, seriously. Yeah.
Right. Well, they're writing a manifesto living in the woods somewhere in the middle of Michigan. Yeah.
They're
right?
online, but they still use BBSs and stuff. You know?
Good for them. Good for them.
So you guys remember looking up like FAQs on things?
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was another thing I used to use it for.
FAQs were early Wikipedia.
Yeah,
like, let's have a clearinghouse of everything you want to know about this thing, the frequently asked questions for this thing. And now they were spread around.
Yeah, the searches weren't very good. So it was like you had to scroll through the page to try to find like the one thing you need to know. But it was still, though, it was the beginnings of that, all that kind of common knowledge coming to one spot.
Well, and it bears pointing out that this, of course, was pre-search engine. There was no Google. There was not even a Yahoo or AltaVista or anything. I will talk about some of those in a minute that are gone. But the only way you found out about things on the internet was somebody on the internet had to tell you where it was so you could find it. And people would publish their links of their favorite things they found or places you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Instant messaging was another one that popped up as pretty quickly. And that kind of, I saw that kind of migrate over from AOL. Because, of course, AOL had their instant messenger.
Because they had like the use groups that you could message with each other on, right?
That's right. That's right inside of there. The one that I remember that really democratized it was ICQ. Do you remember that one?
I remember AIM and ICQ, yeah.
Yep.
Those were the two.
Mm-hmm. And I remember being very proud of my ICQ number because it was only 8 digits. Because when it got popular, it rolled over to 9 digits because they generated more user IDs. But I had an early number, which I guess in the first million or whatever, that's not that impressive. But
I think instant messaging, too, was the first real internet thing next to email. Email was the first real internet thing for me. But then the very next thing that I would say was internet was instant messaging. Because a lot of the other stuff, it was so similar to what you did on BBSs that it felt the exact same.
Yeah.
Good point. That's a great
email
point.
Email and instant messaging were the first two things that were I'm not saying they were completely unique, but they were a huge step or an evolution in the process that we had had before.
It was really a thing you couldn't do in, quite in that way on a BBS, because BBS was relegated to how many people could connect simultaneously, mm-hmm. whereas the internet, everyone's connected simultaneously.
Right.
And that was early texting. I remember starting, yeah. I would get up in the morning and launch my instant messenger on my computer and leave it open all day because I want to be able to hear from somebody. I'll hear a little ding in a corner mm-hmm. and run to my computer and see before you could put it in your pocket.
I mean, way back in the day, CompuServe, remember them?
Oh, yeah.
They had a thing called CB Simulator. Do you guys ever remember using that?
No.
Well, basically, it was text messaging, yeah. but they called it CB Simulator because it was like worked like a CB, except that it was all text.
So it's a message board, you dummy.
Yeah, essentially. And you had, but everyone had handles and all yeah. that stuff. But actually, I think that was like the first dedicated online chat system. And that came out like in the 1980.
Mm. Well, and those are basically chat rooms, which is another common yep. usage, was you go in, you had instant messaging, but then the chat rooms where you get a gang of people in and you could talk in real time.
Yeah. Now that's internet, right? Talking in real time. That's different than BBSs where, mm-hmm. like you're saying, you know, one person logs in, leaves a message, logs out, then the next person logs in right. and sees what they wrote.
Exactly right.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But chat rooms and the internet being online all the time, instant access, real time talking. That's when the internet really started to take off. And, you know, you talk about, Mo, what are the first things that always get adopted in computers, you know, pornography and everything. Some of those chat rooms were
kind of racy.
Know, very racy. Some of them were even dangerous, depending upon what they
yeah,
were.
That's
but
true.
It felt like it was a wild, wild west of a oh, whole for sure. new experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say the chat rooms are very Twitter-like. Because you could broadcast to a lot of people what you're currently thinking, and celebrities would often hold chat room events that you would go into. Whereas today, a celebrity can just tweet anything that's on their mind. Mm-hmm. You would have, oh, well, pick some actor or actress. Sigourney Weaver is going to be in a live chat on AOL from 8 to 9 p.m., and you can be in there and chat with them. Because that was how they could get directly to their fans in these real-time chat rooms. So that's kind of early Twitter, I would argue.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Now, the next few things we're going to talk about, that takes place in what I think what most people would think of is the internet today. A lot of people think the internet is web browsers. It is HTML. It is that language. And while it's not, I think it's fair to assume that most business takes place inside of your web browser.
Yeah.
So let's start with the browser wars. So today you can pick just about anyone you want, but there was a pretty fierce war between your Internet Explorers and your Netscapes and whatever else you had, right?
Yeah. I mean, whatever sure. happened to Netscape.
And there were giant lawsuits going back and forth because Internet Explorer, you know, Microsoft had bundled that with a package mm-hmm. and Netscape were like, no, that's unfair practices, blah, blah. And they won. And
yeah, that's a monopoly. That's yeah.
yeah. Netscape ended up taking a large portion of the internet browser market. At some point, they were like 70-80% or something like that.
It was my browser. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Just like Mo saying, you know, they just eventually died. And it's kind of, yeah. we still see that now. I mean, we still have browser wars or we have different flavors. Like right now, I have, for the first time in probably 20 years, gone back to Internet Explorer.
Yeah, you're right.
As my main browser. But it's because they're based off of somebody else's writing yeah. now. So.
Well, yeah. they're you're talking about their Edge browser?
Yeah, the Edge browser.
That guy, yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah. Microsoft created browser. I never thought I would, in 2020, be using a Microsoft created piece of software for the internet. But yeah, I am again, too.
I mean, you guys remember using Mosaic?
Oh, yeah.
Use that one?
I don't remember
that. Was
one.
The first one that had images, I think,
yeah,
didn't it?
It was.
That, yeah, because initially it was all text. So the World Wide Web started as all text. And Mosaic was the first browser. Now, they didn't last long because everybody adopted images pretty quickly.
Right. I mean, I stuck with Mosaic for a really long time, but because it was like kind of like it didn't have the backing of big companies or anything like that, that you yeah. know, it quickly fell behind, unfortunately.
I don't know, they probably got absorbed by somebody. I don't know. It seems like yeah, that probably. Tech probably got sucked in. Yeah. So the great one on our list to talk about now that we're inside of a browser is as soon as you see a web page, the first thing you want to do is like, I want to make a web page, but I have no idea how. And so that was... services that helped you build a web page, and probably the most famous or infamous one was GeoCities.
Oh my yep. God.
So if you had a GeoCities website, let me just say now you had a shitty website. Just,
yeah.
just put it out there. So I don't think I ever logged into GeoCities, but knew a lot of people that did. And as I understood it, it was essentially like drag and drop. You could put anything you wanted anywhere and it would try to build your page for you.
Oh yeah. I think it was the first attempt at that.
Yeah.
But like you said, the sites they built were just god awful. And the other thing is that it just flooded the market. I mean, I guess in some ways it was good because it really flooded like people creating sites for everything, right? Because it made it easy for just about anybody for a few bucks to create a website.
And it was more than creating the page for you. It gave you a place for the page to live. You didn't have right. to go and purchase a domain. You didn't have to go and get hosting or anything like that. You just said, yep, that's your site. And you can start making whatever you, yeah, here, here's our selection of 8 million animated GIFs. Put them all on there. Go ahead. Yeah. That's what everybody does anyway.
It was, yeah, it was kind of crazy.
I'll never forget all the different animated backgrounds and the icons. It would, and that was the thing too. They, you had to wait for those things to load. So that's part of that early internet experience was just the wait. It wasn't instantaneous, right? It took a while.
The scourge of GeoCities sites, the automatic playing MIDI music files that you couldn't stop. I can't mute it. I got to turn the speaker down because literally they were in the background. You couldn't stop them playing. Everybody thought that was a good idea.
You know what other thing I remember from those browser and those early web pages and everything that was super interesting then, but now nobody gives a crap about it, were counters. Remember the visitors?
Yeah. How many visitors?
Visitors? And you would watch that thing tick up in real time. You're like, somebody's been there. 400 people have logged in the same thing I have.
I remember that one of the browser features that I was not used at all today that I used a lot was turn off downloading images.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to speed things up.
Because it would speed things up that you could, then if it was interesting, I'm like, okay, now I'll download the image for this site. But yeah, because back then it was like, it tripled the time.
Well, and originally they didn't cache the images on your system.
Nope.
You had to download every time. Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah, that's right. Well, there's no place to put it on my computer. My hard drive is only 2 megs, okay? So
that's true. I just upgraded 128K, so I really don't have that much space. Do you guys remember all the people blogging back then? Like, that was a big thing. Everyone's blog. Everyone had to have a blog.
Go read my blog.
Yeah, that was a little bit later on for me that I picked up on blogs, not right away. The first blog, and I'm not going to call it a blog because it was more of a vlog, a video log, but it was GenieCam. That was the first one that really
and that was pretty deep into the life of blogging. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't get into the blogging per se, but when GenieCam first came out, that was fascinating to just know that somebody had a camera or two turned on in their life all the time.
All forever. The time.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just log into that website and just watch. And it wasn't a live stream 1080p experience like you're having now. It was like literally
it was a little square.
Here's an image. And 3 seconds later, there's a new image. And 3 seconds later, there's a new image. It was just snaps and photographs, really. But
because you couldn't stream video, you didn't have the bandwidth to do that. So you just when could you get an update for this picture? Yeah. Blogging was basically, it's not gone or anything today, but
no,
it really wasn't a thing in BBS days. It wasn't until everybody could easily get to everywhere that somebody decided that a public diary is what I really need. And people would start their daily thoughts.
And everyone to see it.
Is it kind of Instagram now, maybe? You know, it's like, here's a picture of what I had for lunch. Here's what I'm currently thinking. Kind of Twitter and Instagram, I guess. But
it was a bit more long format, I guess. And
it
the
was,
people who
yeah.
did them generally, like, they didn't do it like constantly through the day. Like, at the end of the day, they would do their blog, right? And
You know,
it was kind of like a summary of here's what happened today. And some of them were interesting, I think, but 99.99999% of them were just stupid.
Yeah. Well, it's like podcast today. Listen to my podcast. Well, it's like, all right, go read my blog. I'm like,
yeah. I think it just evolved. Yeah, it's probably the same stuff. I remember one of the early things that you could do, which thrilled me, of course, was that you could download movie previews. But the thing was, it took like 2 hours to download a single preview.
You could have gone and watched the movie by the time you got the preview.
Yeah.
And they would offer some different qualities. They're like, and then estimate. Here's this one. This one's in 480p. This should only take about 2 hours to download.
Yeah.
Here's one that should only take about 6 hours, right? To watch a trailer.
To watch a trailer. And then you'd be really good. It's like when it got down to like, you had like the higher speed modems, it's like, this will take 8 minutes. Like, 8 minutes? Oh my God. Why would you ever need anything faster than 8 minutes? You know?
Yeah. That's going back to your GenieCam. That's like the flip of that. It's like, well, I can see a postage stamp. It was really just, it was, you're interested in the movie, but it was, now that I have a multimedia PC, which was a thing, which basically meant it can play video and play CDs, right?
Yeah.
Then it had a video card fast enough to actually change pictures fast enough to watch this, what probably was 10 frames per second video even then, but it looked like it was moving. It was like a miracle.
Yeah. The fact that it was moving.
I want to do another quick roundtable here before we get out of this segment. So we've talked about how we remember first using it and that kind of thing. I want you to think back and remember the experience. What was the first time you can recall you connected your own computer to the internet for the first time? Not the one at the library or something like that. Do you remember that first time? I hear Mo laughing. Let's start with you.
Oh, man. I think the first time I actually went to the real internet, I was actually going through AOL because they had they had their browser. Like I said, at the time, I thought that was it. You know, AOL World was the whole thing.
Right. That's what they wanted you to think. So.
Yeah, exactly. Because you had to go through, you had to jump through hoops to like get to the browser and that in the early days. When I finally got to it, though, and started pulling up pages, it was just amazing how, but the thing was like, there wasn't a search, though, like you said. So you had to know specifically what to look
for. Yeah,
you
know where
you're going. You had to type www.whatever.whatever and hope you had the right address. Otherwise, you got nothing. And I'm trying to remember what the first thing I looked up was. You know, I can't remember. It was so long ago.
No. Well, I can remember that I got an account. They were giving away free ISP accounts through the library. And there was an initiative called Freenet that was in several large cities. And since I was in the capital of Florida, they had a Freenet that you could sign up for at the library. And I went to my house immediately and I took my modem I used for BBSs and I dialed the number. But I remember I was, the first time I logged on, I was completely and utterly underwhelmed because there was nothing to see. There was nothing there. I did email right away. That was the first thing I did because you could go through there. But then I logged off because I'm like, I guess this is not going to last very long. There's not much to do. I was pretty wrong.
Yeah.
What about you, George? Do you remember first getting on?
I don't know that I remember first getting on. The first experience I have with a browser that I have a memory of, at least, was with the Amiga 500 and just being able to use the mouse in the browser. That I remember specifically because was not an always thing. Originally, it was all keyboard.
Versus just typing, which is what you had always done, right? I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and it was all text. Mm-hmm. And so that Amiga 500 was the first browser that I had that was graphical. And I didn't have that before that. And having that experience was really breathtaking because back then, if you downloaded something from a BBS, as far as an image, you know, it was scan line by scan line by scan line, and you had to wait for the whole image to download. But this was like you clicked a link, a little hypertext link, and boom, you were seeing images. And I was like, holy hell, this is incredible. How does the computer on the other side of this connection know where I'm pointing my mouse at on my screen and clicking?
How does it know that? Yeah, that's not obvious like it is today. I hadn't thought of that. That's cool. Well, you had a better first experience than I did because I just said, I guess it's just email. It's over. That's all.
You know, they actually did some research. I looked up what the very first website ever created was.
Oh, like ARPANET or something?
CERN.
Mm-hmm. CERN. Okay.
Yeah. It was a website describing the World Wide Web.
So, there you go.
I guess it's fitting.
That's what we needed. It was the homepage of all homepages.
Yep.
Well, my first experience was clearly mistaken. The internet was not a flash in the pan and just email, but a lot of things came and went. And we're going to talk about some of those that didn't quite stand the test of time right after this.
So that means we could visit most any museum in the world without even leaving home?
Not just museums. You can go anywhere on the net and access resources from around the corner or to the most remote regions of the world.
Now that's amazing.
So where else can we go?
Want to write a letter to President Clinton?
Would he answer us?
I bet he would.
Let's tell him how much we love the internet and that he should try to get more computers for our schools.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On Pressbox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on Pressbox Access.
So we were talking about things like GeoCities and some other ones that are like gone, right?
Right. Everybody was on before and then they vanished. Right?
And there were so many things that we thought would be here forever. You know, it just seemed like they were just part of the heartbeat of the internet that you like they would never be gone, right? They would never go anywhere.
For example,
one of the ones I was thinking was like AOL. I thought AOL was going to be like the giant in this whole arena. And instead, it's like now if people have an AOL email address, I'm like, how old are you?
Well, Mo, the AOL's working hard to brainwash you, though. That's what they wanted you to think.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they started like CompuServe and Genie, which aren't still around anymore. They were just a glorified BBS, and they tried to make people think they were
the internet,
the
yeah.
universal hub for connecting everything. I mean, seeing somebody with an AOL.com email address is like seeing a GeoCities.com website address. Like, oh, they don't really know what's going on. And it's, yeah, I'm glad that GeoCities is gone, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But a big one we used to use is Ask Jeeves. I think it's still around as Ask or something like that.
Oh,
but
the search engines, right?
Yeah. All the different search engines that were out there. There were just tons and tons of them.
So I guess now Google is a verb, right? You say Google and people assume mm-hmm. it means a yeah. web search.
Yep.
But I mean, it could be Bing. It could be whatever.
No. It can't be.
No, it no. can't be Bing.
It can't be Ask Jeeves. It can't be Bing. It can't be Yahoo.
Yahoo.
Yahoo. Or whatever the hell those commercials used to be. Yeah. Good Lord.
Remember Dogpile? That was another one that was cool. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those wow. search engines pretty much gave way. I mean, well, Yahoo's still around. You said Ask Jeeves is around as Ask, but search engine can't be their number one business because I think Google's got a lock on that pretty well.
Yeah. And Google has a lock on it because they did something that the other ones didn't. The other ones tried to have a marketing strategy first and search second. Google started off as search first. Like right. they wanted to be the best way to find things on mm-hmm. the internet.
You're right.
And then marketing came later. And I think that's what propelled them to the mythic level that they are now.
Yeah. Where everyone's fighting to get to the top of the search results on Google.
That's right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like you think about it. Ask Jeeves was a butler guy. Oh, he's cool because he's a butler. He'll go fetch you things. And Yahoo had that creepy little commercial. Yahoo! Or whatever the hell those things were.
Google's just a weird word.
There was no substance behind them, though, because they really weren't that good. Most of them didn't find stuff that you really wanted to find. They were just curated lists that they had found themselves and said,
that's
when somebody
point.
Types in dog, I'm going to give them these 15 pages.
And I think that's the secret sauce that Google did, because rather than being manually curated, they started with bots just searching, scrubbing the web, looking for everything they can find and indexing it based on an algorithm.
Right.
And that's what started to make them look at the critical mass of, well, you've got damn near everything. Why would I go anywhere else? And
do you guys remember when Napster came around?
Well, hold on. We got to let George talk about the public domain now.
So. Okay, that's true. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to step on your toes there, George.
There's
you go
a whole suite of software that was around, LimeWire and Napster and stuff. George, tell us about the early days of the public domain.
About the early days of theft.
Because me and John know nothing about this.
Yeah, no. Of course not. No, I mean, you're right, though, Bo. Napster is really the epitome of what we think of when we think of LimeWire and torrenting and everything. Mm-hmm. Napster is kind of the poster child for what started it, right? It's so much of a poster child that it was even heavily focused on in that movie, The Social Network, which was, supposed to be all about Facebook. But then they had this whole Justin Timberlake angle that was all about Napster and how he defeated the music industry and blah, blah, blah. Essentially, you know, that guy can say whatever he wants to about what he thought he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. He was just trying to steal music. That's all there was to it. He was trying to help people steal music to each other because he didn't want to pay for it because he was a broke ass college or high school kid, however old he was. And I bought into a lot of that stuff myself because at the time I was broke too. And it's not that I didn't want to support certain artists. Like I remember buying my Genesis CD because I love Genesis and Phil Collins and everything. But every now and then, you know, you just want a damn song and you don't want to have to pay for it, especially going down to Tower Records or Turtles or whatever else you had in your area.
The Wiz.
You wanted it instantly. You wanted it right then. And you wanted it in a format that you could use on your computer because that was the other part of it. Mm. I could put a Genesis CD into my computer because it played audio CDs. But taking that one song off of that CD and then using it as an early alert sound in Windows or something like that wasn't easy.
Right.
But Napster made those things easy. So
it started digital.
Yeah.
And of course there was no easy way. Well, I don't say easy way. There was almost no way to just purchase a song, especially to purchase a song digitally. Yes. Right. I could go, like you said, to Turtles and buy a CD single. I'm not going to do that. And it was, I think we were feeling out like, okay, how illegal is it? I downloaded it. The site is there. The police aren't knocking on my door. It was a really interesting time to feel like, what's going on with this copyright thing? Are they going to crack down? Is it going to relax, whatever. And it was.
Oh, and when the news stories kept coming out, boy, that'd scare the crap out of you, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
700 people were indicted today for trading music. Oh, my God. Oh, my turn God. That off right now.
Format.
They found me out. I mean, and also, remember the early days of social media? I mean, talk about a whole slew of stuff coming and going.
Friendster.
And like the epitome is MySpace.
MySpace.
Yeah.
They still make fun of that today where people are like, you know, hey, if you got a MySpace account, I was like, what?
But I think that's still around even. It just evolved into something different.
Is it?
Yeah, I think MySpace, I think, was the one that evolved into more of an independent artist platform.
More like for music, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, Mo and George, you would both be in my top 8 spaces, guaranteed.
Oh, thanks,
so,
man.
Just so you know. Yeah, you'd be there.
What's that one? Meetup was another one I remember back in the early 2000s.
That's just porn all over again.
No, Meetup is still a thing. No, it's still around. I mean, it could be used for porn. Everything can, obviously, but yeah, it's for organizing groups in real life.
Yeah.
The meetup.com is you go find people in your area that like something and they get together and they play board games. Sure. Absolutely. Sure. I'm sure there are sections for that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure there is one or two sections on that. But the biggest thing, I think, is just the number of big retail stores or e-stores that came out and just gone.
You mean the ones that got swallowed by Amazon, right?
Basically, yeah. When you come right down to it, that's probably what happened. Because I remember like early days of online shopping. You could shop at 5 or 6 different stores for something easily. eToys was a big one, right? Like that's swallowed by Amazon.
I remember browsing them, yeah.
But I remember going like, you go to eToys, then you could look on Amazon, then you could look at these other, there's 4 or 5 sites I could look for the same thing, see which one had the best price. But now it's like everything's Amazon or
eBay.
eBay, yeah.
Yeah, you got two now.
There are other storefronts out there, but I mean, they don't have near the, at the time, they all seemed about on a level playing field.
Right.
Now they're niche, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's like Chewy, you know, which is, you know, like a place to go to get just stuff for your pets or,
Yes. Yeah. There's a little bit of that. But all of that's available on the behemoths now. So
exactly.
So there are still like toy store sites, but like George said, they're like very niche, like wooden model toys, you know,
mm-hmm.
You
can find or the super high end collectible toys or something like that.
Right.
Toys.
Right.
Yeah. The mainstream stuff is all lumped together.
I still have a Amazon travel mug that when they just sold books and I bought so many books, they sent me this free travel mug about Amazon. It's like, and it had all these sayings on it, like a room without books is like a person without a soul and all this stuff. It was all centered on book stuff. Because it's hard to believe that that's where Amazon started, just on books.
Just books. Yeah. Well, so speaking of that, on our way out of this segment, I have a quick question for you.
Uh-oh.
Do you remember? Well, certainly you're going to remember, maybe not your first. What is your first memory of the first thing you purchased 100% online?
Yeah, I'll jump on that one because that was easy.
You want to start? Go for it, Mo.
That was books.
Was it books? Was it Amazon? It was
books on Amazon. I was like big into sci-fi fantasy and stuff. And then it was hard to find some of those titles sometimes. But Amazon, you generally could find it.
They had them all. Yeah.
They had them all pretty much. So, and the fact that if you bought a certain number, you got free shipping and their prices actually weren't bad at all. They were like generally, you know, the same as you would pay for it in a store.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I definitely was like a whole bunch of books.
All right. Well, I'll do the extra. Do you remember a book that you bought? Do you remember what it was?
No.
No, just some books. That's fair.
I could probably look at my Amazon history and find out.
Well, I mean, it was only 30 years ago, Mo. I mean, you could
be
forgiven.
Still be there. Okay. Who knows?
George, what about you? Do you have a recollection of the first time you made a transaction and purchased online?
Okay, well, so that opens up the definition of the question a little bit when you're talking about that. If we're going that direction, yeah, it was porn. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Let's try another question and see if it's a similar answer. Do you remember the first thing you purchased where a physical item was delivered to your house?
Man, I don't think that was porn. Let me think.
Okay.
It was probably a book, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, those were things because the whole worry about purchasing stuff online back then was I can't touch it. I can't see it. Like I would never buy clothes online.
Yeah.
Even today, I'm skeptical about buying clothes online, even though, you know, I know people that's the whole business model is, you know, we'll ship you clothes and you send back what you don't want.
Sure.
But you couldn't be sure of the quality, but books were books. And so if I could find it online and it was slightly cheaper than it was at Babbage's or
it was the exact same thing.
Walden Books or whatever the hell the bookstore was in the mall at that time, then yeah, it was probably a book about porn. But
I think my first one was probably a music CD. And it wasn't from like a big retailer like an Amazon or anything like that early on. It was like a fan club kind of group that had I forget the name of it. It might have been like Rhino. Isn't that like, I think it's a publisher that does like limited run or hard to find CDs or reprints. And it might have been like a comedy CD or something from the Firesign Theater, one of those groups that was hard to find. And I'm like, well, I'll try. But it was nervous because like I'm giving them my credit card number. Who are these people? Right, where are they? For many years, almost nobody trusted the internet with their credit card number. He's like, I'm not giving my credit. Well, it's no different than handing it to the waitress at the restaurant. I mean, she can go copy it as easily as the guy across the country could do. So you still have your book, Mo?
I haven't really sure what it was. I was actually looking to see if I could pull my whole shop list. I think there's a way you can actually pull your whole Amazon shopping.
From Clear in the Past?
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Well, a lot of these things are gone, and there's a lot more that's different in the internet today than it was, now that we've established kind of a new norm as that utility, and we're going to cover that stuff right after the break.
Then I open my browser to a choice of search engines that look up menus of almost anything I can think of, whether it's my project on Egypt or Andrew playing games.
It sounds complicated, but really it all happens behind the scenes, so it's easy for you. And you're right. You can find anything from planning a vacation to MTV or real-time live audio. The net is fabulous.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dino Tripodis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
And we've been talking a lot about how the internet evolved, what it was like in the past, what our experiences were. Mm-hmm. But what we haven't talked about yet is how that is different from modern day internet usage. I mean, now the internet, John, you mentioned earlier, the galactic network, right?
Yeah.
That's really what it is now.
I mean, love that.
Yes. I mean, we have internet connections to people who fly in space on the space stations. We have had people, you know, in the space shuttles even. I mean, we have a galactic network. We have stuff out in space. So it's completely evolved into this whole new thing, and it's going to evolve into something new later on. You know, it's always going to keep changing. So do you guys remember, and how is it different from what we have today?
Well, I tell you one thing that I remember very vividly from, again, the early 90s when it was, well, maybe mid 90s when it was really catching on, was today, if there is any product you purchased, any company you work with, I bought a Rubik's Cube. Well, I bet you if I go to Rubik's.com, that's a site. Well, I bought a table from this store. Well, guaranteed they have a website. But that wasn't always the case. And I remember every once in a while, you would see a commercial on TV. And the very last thing on the commercial would be like, so you can trust Land O'Lakes butter. And at the bottom, they would go, LandO'Lakes.com. They were putting that pretty prominently. I was keyed into that. Every time I'd see a commercial, I would watch at the end of a commercial, if they had a website, like, Sony.com has a website now. Or, oh, look, Planters Peanuts has a website now. It was new that major companies got domains and websites. Whereas now it's ubiquitous. Everybody, if you exist, you have a site.
Well, and two, back then it was all .com. And the first time you heard like .net or like, .edu, you're like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. What are you talking
about?
.com?
Does that come after
not the .internet? Well, and because it's everywhere, of course, speed has stopped being an issue. I mean, it's still an issue, but it's...
Well, now it's a different issue, right? Before it was, oh my God, I can't imagine that this thing is in 8 minutes. Now it's like, what the hell? This is taking 30 seconds? Damn it.
Yeah, forget this.
Is it blistering fast or only blazing fast? Because I don't need to bother with blazing fast. I need that. Yeah, it's...
It's kind of like, think about the early days of computers and now. It's like, back in the early days, we talk about the console wars, right? When the programmers who had a program for like the 2600 had such a limited resource resources that they had to be super efficient with everything, right? And it was way early days of the internet too, right? They had to make the images small enough that they downloaded
optimized
fast
and progressive load. And
where today it's like, I think that you get lazy, right? They get to, oh, I thought a 3 gig image out there. I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? That's fine.
People will download fast. So I think some of that skill, I guess, needed, which is a good and bad thing, to build a website is not there.
Well, on one side, you can throw the kitchen sink at it and put everything up there. On the B side, it's not curated. You don't think about what you put up there because everything can go up there because it's so easy to get to.
Yeah. You know, when I think about it every time is when I have to send a damn email and I have to worry about bandwidth, like how many megs, why can't I send a terabyte through the freaking email?
Why is there a limit?
It pisses me off every time. Like when I log into my web thing and it says your limit is 13 gigabytes.
Whatever.
Like, fuck, limit? Why do I have a limit? What the hell?
These days? Yeah, storage is cheap.
Right. They're like, oh, here's another dollar. Give me 5 more terabytes. Shut up.
Exactly.
George, we kind of brought up the whole online shopping and how, like, it was like you didn't want to buy clothes online back in the day, right? And all those things. Well, today, I mean, that's like common.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it had to do with the, like a lot of these online sites, like, hey, if you don't like it, free shipping back and free returns and all that stuff.
Because they were trying to knock down that wall that was that barrier of entry that you said, George. Like, yeah, I don't really trust it. But
and I think people feel more comfortable with it in general. And oh, by the way, I found the first thing I ever ordered online.
Oh, did you find it? What is it?
Yes. It was a... okay. Programming Windows 95.
Perfect.
Yep. I thought you were going to say porn.
No. Amazon didn't sell porn back
then.
That
was the second thing he ordered. Right. That's a very Mo book to order. Very good.
It was on June 14th, 1997.
Wow. I love it. That's fantastic. I can't be the only one either. Like, what a paradigm shift. It used to be you go to the store to buy something, and once you know it's okay, you're like, okay, maybe I'll look online for a cheaper price. But now I use the stores as a showcase to see what I want to buy, and then I go online and get it because I can get it faster. I can get points for it. I get free shipping. I get instant returns. It's probably cheaper. There's no tax. I might boost everything other than like commodities. Like I need a new pair of socks or I need some more milk. But anything that's is a tangible piece of technology or just a commodity that you would use, and I go online to get it now. And that's totally opposite.
I pretty much do that first now. I don't go to the stores or anything. And I think for me, the thing that changed that the most was Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
When Amazon Prime was, you know, when I got onto that and I was like, I don't have to bundle a bunch of orders to get free shipping.
Yeah.
I don't have to wait 6 months for the thing to come in. Now it's like, it'll be here tomorrow or the next day. And now I've gotten so spoiled by that, that if something doesn't get here in 2 days, where the fuck is my item?
Yeah.
Listen, I ordered that $2 adapter and you said it'd be here tomorrow.
You're right. Cause when Prime came around, it was like, oh, I need toothpaste. I was just, I didn't care.
It'll be here soon enough.
Yeah. I mean, you said I'm getting low on toothpaste. It'll be here within 2 days. Great. Although, you know, like I said, we talked about this earlier in some other podcasts where it's like certain things like bookstores, you know, I used to love just browsing bookstores, just going to a bookstore and just seeing what's out there.
Right.
Now when I do it though, I look at the title, I'm like, oh, that looks an interesting book. And I have my phone out and I'm looking up the price.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it on Amazon cheaper, you know,
and for sure.
I get a digital copy. So yeah, things definitely have changed.
Well, for another shift, I mean, George, going back to, you mentioned that Jenny cam and the little postage stamp pieces of video that you could see every once in a while. Look at what broadband has done for distribution of video content.
Oh, geez.
I mean, it's first crazy. The democratization of it. So you have like your YouTube and stuff like that.
I was going to say,
anybody can put
stuff
out. It's
the very reason for our existence on this podcast is YouTube.
Video on the internet is possible. You know, and then mainstream media, you got Disney Plus and Netflix, the behemoth of, and CBS All Access and all those. Streaming video on the internet. I mean, I don't even have a DVD player hooked up to my TV anymore.
Yeah,
because everything is streaming. Everything. It's digital.
Yep. And you even do 4K digitally now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's stupid. It's just
crazy. Yeah. It'd be a long change from, well, wait 8 minutes to watch a trailer.
Yeah.
You know, nope. To, you know, let me see the trailer before I watch this movie. And the trailer comes up immediately. The movie comes up immediately. Yeah. I mean,
what do you mean it's buffering for 5 seconds? That's not acceptable.
Buffering. And we can't forget like how much social media has changed.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. From the days of MySpace, where
Geez, whereas like, it's just ridiculous. I mean, everybody I know has a Facebook account, pretty much.
Just about. And when people don't, it's odd, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Hey, are you, I look at them, they're like, I'm not on Facebook. Like, really?
Yeah, well, my son, he's totally against it.
What happened? why not?
You're right, though. That's part of the evolution. Mo, you mentioned your child. You know, same thing with my kid. My kid looks at Facebook as like the old people's thing. Mm-hmm. That's not what they use social media now. Now they have WhatsApp or whatever other TikTok thing that they use.
Oh.
Facebook is the old people's version of social media. And I guarantee you in like 10 more years or so, Facebook will still be there, but the generation that cares about it won't. Like, it,
it'll be the MySpace in 20 years. Won't
exactly.
It? Yeah.
No, my son has a philosophical issue with all social media, so he doesn't do any of that at all.
Wow.
He is no social presence.
It's got to be tough as a youngster. I can't imagine that they thrive on that. Is he? All right.
He's totally fine with it
because he's never gotten into it, probably. So
he doesn't
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, just go on Facebook. Don't even check it, just so I could, like, you know, message you or something. He's like, you have text messaging. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, good point.
And the other thing is just like because we have, you know, faster download speeds and because the technology changes, like, you know, HTML5 and all the new protocols and stuff that are out there, you know, the websites themselves have become almost like showcases. They've become so intricate and they have video and playing automatically and they have audio.
Well, and it's more than a website. I mean, the sites do something.
Right.
You know, you used to, for a long time, web pages or websites were, it was just like a digital brochure. Here's who we are. Here's our phone number. Come look us up. And now
they weren't terribly interactive. Now, if they're not interactive, exactly, you're not watching them.
Yeah. What do you mean I can't upload my picture for my account, my thumbnail, my avatar? You know, each little website becomes a little social hub where they want your information and they'll be able to message you. Yeah.
Have you guys got into the cryptocurrency world at all? I never have, but I know it's like big.
Yeah. I barely understand it.
It's
decentralized anonymous currency that's attached to Kanye West or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
people putting out their own.
And you have to, like, it's not based on anything. You have to trust, but it's still like, I mean, it's so prevalent, but it wouldn't exist without the modern internet. I mean, it wouldn't be there.
That may be one that maybe shouldn't exist. Just saying.
I don't disagree with you on that, George.
I don't know enough about it to have an opinion.
It's
but
not anything different than what happened after Nixon took us off the gold standard, right? Before that, money actually had something behind it that meant something. There was a physical representation.
Exactly. That was the point I was going to. Right.
Cryptocurrency, and the dollar bill, truthfully, doesn't have anything behind it that gives it any value other than our government, I guess, maybe.
We all just agree that it's worth something.
Yeah.
Right. It's the faith in the United States currency. I mean, that's all it is.
It's like we accept the currency because we have confidence that we can turn around and someone else will accept it. That's the only value that it has.
That's kind of weird.
Cryptocurrency is like that too.
You know, the other thing I want to say is how it's different today is the internet. I can't think of a single aspect of my life that the internet is not some part of.
That's true, and both good and bad, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, work. All my work stuff is through the internet. Mm-hmm. Everything's on the cloud. Everything's
working
online.
Remotely right now during COVID.
Exactly.
If it wasn't for the internet, most of us would be broke as hell right now.
Good point.
Because we couldn't work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or sick. Broke or sick. Or both. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I saw somebody say, they mentioned, you know, can you imagine, we're spoiled because we live in the current time and we have the internet the way we have it. Can you imagine this pandemic taking place in 2020, taking place in 1990? And, you know, maybe you have a Nokia flip phone or a box phone. I mean, there's not really a centralized any way to communicate. You would be isolated. You would be going stark raving mad.
Watching CNN.
There are people alive right now who went through the 1918 plague. So I don't know if they have any memory of it, obviously, or anything, but they went through a time when not only was there no internet, there was just no communication whatsoever. There was no
newspaper,
TV.
Was it, right?
There was no
not even a phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine that would be quite a bit scarier of a situation, although I think the internet provides its own scary aspects to this, right? Because of all the misinformation out there and people putting out these weird, crazy conspiracy theories. Because when you put something in writing, whether it be on your screen or on a piece of paper, it feels more legitimate.
It feels real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's different about the internet when it first started to now, when the internet first started, you didn't necessarily believe everything. You were trepidatious about it. It was like, well, this is new. I don't know if I really trust this thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's on Wikipedia. Okay.
Fact. It must be right. Yeah.
I think it also has to do with like the effort. You know, I mean, think back, like, you know, in order to publish a newspaper, right, it took a lot of effort. So you had some faith that they took some.
Well, and there
some
were some checks and balances, and there was an editor, where now you can go and post a blog or post a YouTube video or anything.
I could go on Facebook and say anything. And
I can say right now that there is no such thing as gravity and explain why I believe it. And there's going to be a dozen people that go, oh, he might be onto something because it's on the internet. You know,
I knew this earth was flat. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
First, we need to get an ISP or internet service provider. It connects you to the net through high-speed lines. Then I download or install a browser that allows me to view all information on the net in my computer. Then I open my browser to a choice of search engines that look up menus of almost anything I can think of, whether it's my project on Egypt or Andrew playing games.
It sounds complicated, but really it all happens behind the scenes, so it's easy for you.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. Well, it is time to log off of this episode of The Backtrack, talking all about the origins of the internet. So grateful that you joined us. George Moe had a great time reminiscing with you. Before we leave, though, you know, I take just a second to express our gratitude for our amazing patrons who support us financially over at patreon.com. These are folks that give a few bucks every month to support the work that we do here on the podcast, over on YouTube and on the website. And I am so grateful. I would like to thank each and every one of you individually. Thank you so much. T2, Levi, Travis, Dan, Chet, Blasteter, Stash It, Chad, Chewbacca, Jason, Lee, Matt, Steen, Sean, Dana, Shelby, Ben, Greg Z, Arlem, Agile, Jonathan H, Greg L, David, Stu Monkey, Thomas, Marcus, Adam, Davis, Slomo, Mike C, Mark, and Tony. Oh, I made it all the way through.
You know, you're going to have to stop saying, I'm going to take a second.
Yeah, it takes a little more than a second, doesn't it?
It takes more than a second now.
We're so grateful for your support and for believing in us. It really keeps fuel in the tank, makes us want to keep doing what we do. If you would like to support the things that we do and join this roster of amazing folks, Mo, would you please tell the fine fourth listeners how they can get that done?
Oh, absolutely. All you gotta do is go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. It'll take you right to the Patreon website, and there you get to pick what level you want to support us at. Mm-hmm. The more you give, we have swag, we have behind the scenes videos and audio and so much stuff, extra content that we give these people who give a few bucks or whatever they can every month, just to show that how much they support what we do. And it really just helps us know why we do what we do and keeps us going.
And all that bonus content is on the internet, so you know it's true. It's absolutely factual.
That's all true.
That is going to wrap it up for this Backtrack. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, but next week with a regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. Mo, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, man, always fun.
George, you know I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
And fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And George is here. George is here too.
Apparently.
Are you? Fuck you, Mo. You're gone. One more time. Let's do that again rather than try to jump in the middle.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.